This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Dustin Sweetelson of Easton Live, Mad Dog Sports Radio will join us. We will go over a bunch of things. Knicks and Pacers get going Wednesday. We'll talk about that. We will talk a little MLB, NFL schedule, some NBA offseason, any other NBA bets he's made. I know he's made some NBA finals bets that he wants to discuss. So excited to talk to Dustin. And we'll just start here, Knicks and Pacers, and what we talked about on Monday here. I'm going to go Knicks in seven. I think this is a great series, an absolutely fantastic series, especially when you consider, if you're old enough to remember this playoff history between these two, and it does get just kind of lumped together. People talk about they met all the time in the playoffs. They really did meet all the time in the playoffs. Obviously, they met last year. Pacers went in seven. Knicks fall apart just in terms of injuries. Bodies just ran out of players pretty much as everyone got hurt in that game seven. Knicks led 2-0. Had a chance to win game three. Led middle of the third quarter in game three. Looked like they were going to win that game and win the series in easy fashion. Lose that. Get blown out in game four. And then it went to seven. And the Knicks were just, like I said, out of gas, out of bodies. Pacers won that in seven. These teams met also in 2013, which I think gets forgotten a little bit about. That was a Carmelo team. Knicks had home court. Pacers won in six. That was Paul George. That was kind of his coming out party. But from 93 to 2000, these teams met so many times and had so many great matchups in the playoffs, starting with 93, where they meet in the first round and the Knicks win the series 3-1. Move on to the second round. Okay, not a classic there, but you go to 94 where Knicks win in seven. That's in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's the go to the finals where they famously, infamously led the Rockets 3-2. Couldn't close. Rockets win the finals. That's the OJ year. That's the Starks 3-18 year. But Knicks won in seven in the Conference Finals. Then they meet again 95 in the Conference Semis. Goes to seven again. Pacers win by two. That's the Ewing. If you're old enough to remember, Ewing misses the finger roll layup at the buzzer to lose by two. Pacers go on to the Conference Finals, lose to Orlando. So that went seven. That's in 95. Then again, in 98, they meet in the second round. Pacers win in five. 99, that's the Larry Johnson four-point play year. Kind of a phantom call, but still, that was an iconic moment, an iconic series, at least an iconic moment. As the Knicks go to the finals, win that series 4-2. They won in six. And then again in 2000, it goes to six again in the Conference Finals. This is the Pacers winning 4-2 as the Pacers went on to go to the finals, lose to the Lakers. So it's interesting, as much as these teams met deep into the playoffs, neither of them, it never resulted, and they met three times in the Conference Finals, it never resulted in a title for either team. A lot of great series. The Reggie Miller 8 points in 9 seconds. The Ewing finger roll is an iconic one. The Larry Johnson four-point play is an iconic one. Last year's not on that level because neither team was really a threat to win it all. And a lot of it was marred by injuries and just neither of those teams were that great. I think this one has some juice. Obviously, the winner goes to the conference. The winner goes to the final. And I do think it's similar to the 90s teams where I don't think either team is going to beat OKC. We're recording this before game one of Minnesota and OKC. So, who knows? Maybe Minnesota, by the time you're listening, this is up 1-0 and SGA gets hurt or something wild happens. I think OKC, even if they were to lose game one, is in good shape to go to a final and win a championship. But hey, you'll take this moment if you're a Knicks fan. The fact that you're in a conference finals with home court, a chance to get to an NBA finals, and then just root, hope for the best. Who knows? Crazy things happen in sports. And the possibility that it's ever a Knicks-Timberwolves final is just so bizarre. Obviously, Pacers Timberwolves final as equally as bizarre, but the fact with the trade between Minnesota and New York right before the season and the idea that these teams would meet in a final would just be so unlikely, but we're not that far away from it. Again, I'm going Knicks in seven plus 400 on DraftKings. I think that's a great number. I'd be shocked if this goes five. I'd be shocked if it is a sweep. To me, laying $1.75 to play over the 5.5 games, I think is fine. I just think this is a series where I got a feeling home court holds up more than it did in the past series here. Now, the home team in the Knicks playoff games has won the last three, but prior to that, they had lost the last eight straight up. So road teams went 8-0 at one point in these Knicks playoff games. It was five in a row where the road team won in Knicks Pistons, and then three in a row to start the series. Knicks Celtics or the road team won. I have a feeling home court matters more in these. I'm just going to go with the idea that it's home court and it's Brunson. I don't think the Pacers have a great answer for Brunson. Pacers will certainly have their moments in this series. Knicks will struggle to guard them. We'll see what they do in terms of, you know, hacking Mitchell Robinson. If that becomes a strategy, and if he's not going to make his free throws, that is going to continue to be a strategy. But to me, long series, these teams trade punches, and it is Knicks going to the NBA Finals, which I still have a hard time wrapping my head around. But good for them. Good for them. I hope they get there. I hope they win the series. I do think they'll win the series. So I think the minus 135, minus 140 or so to win the series is a good bet. And I think them, if you're really looking for bang for your buck, plus 400 to win it in seven, to me, are fantastic bets. I don't love the idea of laying 4.5 here in game one just because I do think all of these games are close. I do think it gives the Knicks an advantage to have all this time off because Indiana's fresher. Indiana's a little bit deeper. And Indiana's just not as banged up. Knicks, you know, feels like Brunson's always battling an ankle. Or they're not as tough as they were last year, but the Knicks are still a tough physical team. I think Robinson brings them some physicality. The fact that it went six against the Celtics, went six against Detroit, that wasn't an easy series. Milwaukee's played a couple of five gamers, and Milwaukee's, their series got done Tuesday, a week ago. So they're going to have plenty of rest here, a full week's rest where the Knicks had to go until Friday night. Now, Friday night was a breeze, even though the starters were still in there for 30-something minutes for why, for reasons that are unclear to me. But so Saturday off, Sunday off, Monday and Tuesday off. The 4 days off for the Knicks helps. If this series were to start Monday, I think pretty big advantage to Indiana in terms of the rest. The fact that it starts Wednesday, I think, is very favorable here. So should be a lot of fun. Should be a lot of fun. I don't love laying 4.5 in a series that I think is this close. And I think these teams are dead even. I've heard a lot of people make the case Indiana's better. Maybe Indiana's looked a little bit better in the playoffs. I'll buy that. Knicks, their wins have been, I want to say fortunate because, look, you either win or you don't, but they had to come from behind. Remember, against Detroit a lot, and Detroit's not that far away from thinking, man, I wonder what they're thinking. They're probably thinking, we're not that far from being in this series ourselves, being in a conference final, because the Pistons outplayed the Knicks for a large portion of that series. And then the Celtics-Knicks, we know what happened in the first two games with all of the 20-point comebacks there in the first two games, and then a 14-point comeback in game number four. So the Knicks have been outplayed for a large portion of these playoffs, and I thought Detroit was live to beat them in round one, and here I am picking them in round three. I get that, but home court, even series, I'm excited for it. Should be a lot of fun. The history, the fact they met last year, there's just a trip to the finals on the line. There's a lot to like about the series. Plus, there's new blood. Minnesota and OKC is new blood. I know Minnesota was in here last year. Indiana was in here last year, but these are teams that we have not seen an NBA final in a long time. And the most recent NBA finals visit for any of these teams is the Thunder back in 2012. And that was a whole new version of them. That was Durant, Harden, Westbrook. So it's fun in an NBA where you get a lot of the same teams over again. For a while, every finals either had LeBron, Kobe, or the Spurs. I mean, you could basically look at 20 years of finals where you go through every single one. And one of them either had LeBron and had Kobe or had the Spurs or one of those, you know, three participants. It was a lot of repetitiveness. And then we had the stretch where it was Curry versus LeBron, the Warriors versus the Cavs for four straight years. It's been the Celtics a lot. So the fact that there's new blood, I do think makes it fun now. If it's ever Minnesota versus Indiana, I don't know how much fun that is for the average fan, but I don't think we're getting that. I think we're looking at OKC Knicks, at least one of them getting in there. And if you have the Knicks, you have a lot of juice, especially if it's ever Knicks T-Wolves. The Knicks are obviously underdogs in that series, but live to win that series. So I think barring an Indiana OKC final, I think we're looking at a really unique final, a fun final, just because the newness of the participants. So we'll talk about that with Dustin Sweetelson coming up. We'll talk about some Mets. He's a Mets guy. So he's a Mets guy, a Knicks guy, and a Giants guy. So we'll probably touch on all three with him. And it's getting a little weird with Soto. Soto is not, I've made the point that the last guy you have to worry about ever is Soto. He's just such a consistent, productive player. So many walks, so many line drives, so many good at-bats. He has looked, see, disinterested is a way for the Yankee fan to poke the Met fan. Oh, he doesn't really want to be there. But he has not hustled multiple times recently. He hit one off the wall Monday night against Fenway. He's jogging. First of all, he watched it. I don't know if he thought it was gone or he just didn't feel like running. He watches it. It's not gone. Hits off the wall, and he ends up with a single. And he did steal second the following pitch. Didn't hustle out of the box. There was a play Sunday night where LeMahieu made a good play, and he's just running three quarter speed, not even up the first baseline. So there is a little of that with Soto. I don't remember that a lot last year with the Yankees. And I do think from a baseball standpoint, a fit standpoint, the Yankees were the perfect fit. He had Judge, he had Yankee Stadium. Now I understand completely. Maybe he had a concern that if I re-sign here with the Yankees, they're not going to spend any money. That's going to be it. They're going to close the wallets. We're going to be stuck with this team as good as it is. We're going to be stuck with this team for the next 8 years, and we're going to get older together and not going to improve around us. Maybe that was a concern. I think it was a legitimate concern if that's the case. Maybe Cohen used that against him. But from a baseball fit standpoint, of having Judge take the pressure off from a media standpoint, from a baseball standpoint, just hitting in that lineup with Judge, having that protection, having the short porch in Yankee Stadium, I thought Soto and the Yankees was a perfect fit. And maybe, okay, I think him and the Mets are going to be fine. I think that this is something to keep an eye on, at least. Something to keep an eye on, the fact that even after the game, they're asking him, hey, running harder, is that something you need to worry about or work on? And he just completely dismissed it. I wouldn't love that if I'm a Mets fan, but it's at least something to keep on the radar. So we'll ask Dustin Sweetelson about that. NBA playoffs, some NFL schedule. That is next. This is Should've Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. Let's talk a little basketball, talk a little baseball, maybe some NFL. We can do a little bit of everything because he joins us now. You can catch him Mad Dog Sports Radio, VSiN Live. It is Dustin Sweetelson. Dustin, what's up, man? How are you?
My man Will Hill, what's good, man? It's look, we talk a lot in our world about the fall when all the sports come together. And while we don't have football right now, I think this is a fun time. And now we're gonna go like every other day with the NBA and NHL mixing in MLB in there. I think this is a very underrated time of year.
It is. Once it dies down, which you can kind of sense coming the last couple nights, we're recording this Tuesday right before game one of the Timberwolves. That Sunday night where you're looking around, you're itching for a game. We had Mets Yankees, but Monday night with no NBA, no NHL, you can kind of sense summer coming around the corner. But look, what by the time the NBA and NHL end, you're like 6 weeks away from the Hall of Fame game and football restarting. So it's the lull is not that bad, and even the lull has baseball. So I really like this time of the year. I'm with you. We'll start NBA. You're a Knicks fan. The Knicks are four wins away from the NBA Finals. I can't even believe it. I think they're getting there. I picked them in seven. I get toss-up series. Indiana's really good. Indiana's been slept on, but I think home court and Brunson is enough to get them home to an NBA Final. I think they'll get dusted in the NBA Final probably by OKC. But how confident are you feeling? What's your take here on this series?
Yeah, I'm not confident at all, Will. I mean, that shouldn't surprise you. You know me. I think Indiana's really good and they're playing their best basketball. The question I have is, can they continue this pace? I mean, they've been ridiculous. They're super aggressive. They're absolutely physical. They push the pace. They pick teams up 94 feet. They're one of three teams with 40 wins since January 1st. The other two were the Thunder and the Celtics. That lets you know how good they are. Eighth best defensive rating since December, and they're the deeper team. So I am very scared of Indiana. Also, let's remember, child of the 90s. They ruined my childhood many times. I am terrified of Indiana. I think when you look at Haliburton, he's taken that next step. Is he a superstar? No. But he's on a trajectory where I think he is a difficult player to match up with. I actually think he's too selfless at times. If he starts calling his own number a little bit more, I think Indiana is absolutely a scary team for the Knicks to deal with. The reason why, though, I do think the Knicks will prevail in this series, but I think it goes six or seven, is Karl-Anthony Towns. He's just a mismatch for Indiana. The reason why I have questions is Karl-Anthony Towns sometimes doesn't like to play as a guy who has a 7-foot body. He likes to live on the perimeter. He likes to hoist up those threes. That terrifies me in a matchup where I think he can be a mismatch down low, and he's dominated Indiana every time the Knicks have faced them this year.
What's your ultimate pick here? Knicks and what? Knicks and
Knicks in seven, because if we're going to be fair about the Knicks, if we're going to assess in the two series the Knicks have moved on from, the Knicks have not played better basketball over every minute of that game. If we're going to go minute by minute, the opponent, Detroit and Boston, have technically outplayed them for the majority of those series, yet they're here. And the reason is, you mentioned it, Jalen Brunson. End of the series, end of the game, fourth quarter, ball's in his hands. He's going to find a way to make it happen.
anything you're betting from this series, either spread, total games? I think over 5.5 games is juice, but I'd be shocked if this only goes 4 or 5. I know you gotta lay $1.70 up to $1.80 in some spots. And anything in terms of Knicks in seven pays 4 to 1. I like that. I bet that. Anything from a betting perspective for you?
I moved ahead to the next series, Will. I have an NBA Finals MVP ticket I just placed right before we started recording this. I went 40-1 Karl Anthony Towns. He is the X factor. He could put up monster numbers. Also, let's add in the fact that they may face Minnesota. If Karl Anthony Towns goes up against his former team and puts up monster numbers, I think 40-1 is an interesting bet. I also say on the other end, I bet the other narrative. If it's Minnesota, Julius Randle at 25-1 against his former team if he goes off as well.
I can't even get there with I can't even wrap my head around a Minnesota Knicks final. The idea that two teams would trade all-stars like right before the season started and meet in the finals is, I mean, if there's a precedent for it, I can't think of one. It would just be so bizarre if these teams met in the finals. It really would.
No, a trade working out for both teams, it just never happens like that. It would be absolutely crazy. I mean, you're never afraid to steer away from a conspiracy. It feels like the NBA is going to make sure the New York Knicks are in the finals, right? they've got Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Indiana. They are going to make sure the New York market is in the finals, right?
I don't think Silver does that. I think with Stern, you might have been onto something. I just don't think Silver's like that.
That's probably fair. Seems like he's on the up and up. Except for the lottery.
Are you of the belief there was something fishy with that?
No, but I just enjoy it. I think it's awesome when you look at, because let's go back to the trade. Let's go back to the Luka trade to the Lakers. I kept saying it's never good when the only logical explanation for why something happens is the conspiracy. Like, I can't find anything other than a conspiracy happening here, but we didn't know what the back end of it was. We didn't know what the payoff of the conspiracy was. It coming to fruition and the Mavericks getting the number one pick, it does make the conspiracy more fun, but I do think that thing's totally random, because if you're accusing the NBA of shadiness with that, you're actually not accusing the NBA. You're accusing a third party company, Ernst & Young, that handles all that stuff, of doing shady stuff. And that company does a lot of work around the country, and I don't even know what they do. I just know when I lived in DC, I dated people and they said, "Oh, my ex used to work at Ernst & Young. You don't make enough money." So I know that company's important.
What's interesting is I was of the belief when it first happened, I was like, man, there's got to be something fishy. Then I was like, nah, there's no way it would have happened, because the people that say it's fishy are of the belief that Luka was traded to the Lakers with the understanding, with the agreement that, hey, you trade Luka, but we'll get you flag on the other end.
But then they're in the play-in.
Then they're in the play-in. That's with Davis getting hurt and Kyrie getting hurt. So that doesn't make sense. The only thing I would entertain, and I hadn't thought of this until I heard it somewhere else, the Mavs fans were so unhappy. It was to the point of rebellion. It was to the point where we don't want season tickets. We're, you know, burning stuff. That's about as bummed out as a franchise could be, and rightfully so, that it was a way to save that for them to just appease the Mavs fans. That maybe there's something to. I don't ultimately think it was, but that at least makes sense.
Yeah, and if the plan was to make it so the Mavs can move to Vegas, which was another conspiracy down the road, I don't know if Cooper Flagg's necessarily like the guy that leads your team into Las Vegas. No offense to him, but he's from like New Hampshire or Maine or one of those states that is way up there, one of the 13 colonies with a lot of white people.
I always get him confused too, New Hampshire and Maine. Where do you think – we're recording this, like I said, before Minnesota OKC. Just a big picture thought. Who do you think wins that series and how many games?
I think it's completely mispriced, Will. I think Minnesota has something for OKC. Now, I am in the minority, and I was almost proven right last round, but I've been saying I don't know if I buy Oklahoma City completely. And it's more that every expert we had on that watched the NBA when we were watching football, they were so indignant about how the Thunder were inevitable. And I was like, guys, the regular season, the postseason are totally different animals. And Oklahoma City's awesome. They're great on both ends of the floor. But I have a lot of questions about them. I have questions about the depth when it comes to size, matching up with other teams with bigs. I have questions late in the game. If SGA's shot's not falling, who can they turn to? I have major trust factors with a guy like Jalen Williams, who is completely up and down in the series against the Nuggets. I just think when you look at Oklahoma City, it's a young team. They don't have a veteran presence to rely on. They're coming up together. They're wildly impressive. I think they're an awesome team. But I think there are holes that can be poked, and we saw it happen against Denver. And I think Minnesota offers a lot of the same issues. One, they have a big and Gobert who can protect the rim. In that series against Denver, there was issues protecting the rim. I would say when it comes to Minnesota, they can defend. They're not as good defensively as Oklahoma City, but they can defend the perimeter as well. And then I also think there's secondary scoring for the Timberwolves, whereas Oklahoma City just faced a Denver team that doesn't have reliable secondary scoring. And they're not quite as deep as the Thunder when it comes to a bench, but they have guys coming off the bench that can get buckets, that can make things happen, that can take over their time on the floor. And I thought Oklahoma City benefited a lot from winning those non-Jokic minutes. I'd also say I don't understand Adelman taking Jokic and Murray off the floor in game seven at the same time. I was baffled by that, watching that as someone who had a future on Denver to win it all. But I think Minnesota's playing their best basketball. If you go back the last like 6 weeks of the season, they were one of the best teams in the NBA. They do it on both ends. And really Julius Randle becoming that scoring threat that he wasn't early in the year. He was hurt, came back, was okay, getting acclimated to his new team. He's found his role. He's found his rhythm. He's a dangerous weapon. He can create an isolation. So on those nights where Anthony Edwards is off, which we've seen him be prone to having off nights, there's opportunities for him to completely take over. But this team's 30-6, their last 36 that Randle has played. He's averaging 24 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds, 10 games in the postseason. They went 2-2 against Oklahoma City, the Timberwolves, in the regular season. They split. Randle missed both the wins. Now they have Randle. Now the team gets deeper. I just think Minnesota is a really good team, and also this is where the experience can show. They were in the Western Conference Finals a year ago. Oklahoma City hasn't gotten to this point before. I lean with Minnesota. I think that they have a very good chance to get it done, and mostly it's me just sticking to my guns that 3 months ago I casually just said on the radio, I'm not buying Oklahoma City, and I just need to be proven right.
Last couple NBA ones, just you can go quick if you want. What team is Giannis on next year? What team is Durant on next year?
So I want Giannis on the Thunder. I want the Thunder to lose here. I want them to trade assets. They have all the picks they need. They have so much depth on that roster they can afford. They draft really well, so you know they can replace these guys. I would love that. Or it's Houston. Houston can take the next step. They have what's needed in terms of players to get the deal done. You add them to that core. I don't think they're going to have to give Amen Thompson up. I think they'd give up Jalen Green and Fred VanVleet and a couple of other pieces. Maybe Şengün's in the deal. But if I'm Houston, I do whatever it takes to get it done. I think Houston is the team where he ends up because they have the assets. They're a potential title contender with him. He fits what they want to do on the defensive end of things. I think that's the spot for Giannis. What was the other question you asked me?
Oh, Durant.
That's another guy. If Oklahoma City, ready? If Oklahoma City strikes out on Giannis, let the whole story come together. The prince that was promised.
Thought about that too.
Kevin Durant goes back to the Thunder in his late ages of his career and delivers a title.
Will be fun.
Because also, he won't cost as much. You won't have to buy Durant the way you'd have to buy Giannis at such a have to sacrifice the future. You can maybe give up a first or maybe two firsts or a player in a first. It's not going to take a haul to get Durant. He comes home, and if he becomes that second player to SGA and they win a title together, it'll be one of the great stories in the history of the NBA.
It'd be great. I don't know how the second apron works. All these NBA nerds all squash these fake trades, so it makes it less fun. But I agree, from a narrative standpoint, that would be a lot of fun, and the basketball fit would make sense. I'm surprised you didn't say the Spurs for Giannis. That's one team that I think is really live.
I'm just kind of sick of the Spurs benefiting. And like, if they would have gotten the first pick, I would have been bitter.
Goodness.
It's just like, how many times can history just like work on your side and things fall into your lap over and over again?
Yep, no doubt about it. Switch to baseball. Are you starting to get frustrated a little bit with Soto? Not running out of the box, not really hitting a lot of ground balls. I've always said, I've said this all the time, the last guy you ever have to worry about is Soto. He's just such a reliable player. But that being said, hits the ball off the wall Monday night against the Red Sox at Fenway, jogs to first, only gets a single. There was a play Sunday night against the Yankees where he's not running out of the box. Is this frustrating to you at this point?
Honestly, no. I just think there's something about going to the Mets where there's a first-year acclimation period. Like Carlos Beltran in 2005 wasn't very good with the Mets. They got frustrated by him. They had similar issues about the quote-unquote hustling, and then later on we just called him smooth. I can remember the same thing being said about Robinson Cano, about how he doesn't hustle, he doesn't try. Well, some guys are just smooth. In this case, Soto's not hustling. Also, Lindor. Lindor's first couple years with the Mets, he struggled. He didn't have issues with hustling, but the performance wasn't there. If the performance was there, people wouldn't care about this hustling stuff. But because he's not putting up those monster numbers we're used to seeing, people are bitter. I know I'm supposed to be outraged by this. I'm supposed to be like, he's making all this money. It's baseball. It's a long season. He's boring. Let's be fair. He put up monster power numbers in Yankee Stadium last year, but the power was a question before he went to the Bronx. In San Diego, we didn't know. We knew he's a good hitter. We knew he's an elite hitter. We know he gets on base. He's an analytical darling, but he's a boring baseball player if we're being totally fair about his game. He's a guy that day in and day out, you'll watch, you go, man, he's really, really good. They're really, really good at bats. He knows what he's doing. He has a plan. And you're going to say he had a couple games where he went absolutely absurd, but he's not like a highlight reel player over the course of the season. But at the end of the year, at the end of 162, you'll look at the numbers and be like, huh, he has like a 400 on base percentage. He hit 280. He ended up having like 28 homers and drove in 115. And he had a very, very good year. That's what you paid for. That's the guy you got, not the guy who hit 40 bombs in Yankee Stadium. Curtis Granderson hit 40 bombs in Yankee Stadium. Like anyone, any lefty who's smart about their approach can do it there. You're getting a very, very good baseball player. And the issues that come from him not hustling, it's only because the performance isn't there. If the performance is there, people can deal with whatever.
Yeah, and you're right. There's not – I mean, he's a lot of line drives and walks. And from a baseball standpoint, he was perfect for the Yankees because he had Judge, not just from hitting behind him in the lineup, but – take the pressure off him, didn't have to answer as many questions, the short porch in Yankee Stadium. Everything about him and Judge, everything about him in Yankee Stadium was absolutely perfect. Not that he won't succeed with the Mets. And look, Cohen's determined to spend money. I'm sure they're going to put a winning team on the field for his career there. I get that. But the baseball standpoint, the fit was really, really perfect with the Yanks.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want me to be angry about something Mets related, it's that a couple years ago, the Mets traded for Javi Baez at the deadline. Zach Scott was the interim GM. I mean, why he was allowed to trade a top prospect in Pete Crow Armstrong, who I'm looking at the MVP board right now, is fourth on in the betting market to win MVP because he didn't believe the bat would ever come around. He was like 19 years old. He was drafted the year before at Harvard Westlake. He was a stud prospect. And they traded for Javi Baez, who turned on the fans and was booing the fans, was giving them the thumbs down back. Like, that is the something to be outraged about. You want to be bitter about something is that Pete Crow Armstrong should be manning center field for the Mets right now as an MVP candidate. Instead, they traded for Javi Baez in a rental year.
Yeah, and Kelenic was always the one that Met fans were like drooling over. They thought that was going to be the one that got away. It ends up being Pete Crow Armstrong because, yeah, you look at the numbers, some of the prorated stats, it's, I think, 41 homers, 48 steals or vice versa. It's just video game stuff. It's incredible. Terrible trade. And I had forgotten who they traded for. I had to actually look that up a few days ago. Any other baseball takes, any other baseball bets you want to get on the record here?
Yeah, I did bet Senga before his start against the Red Sox the other night for Cy Young. I have a few bets in that market. I haven't gone crazy this year just because I know in the summer I'm going to get really locked in. I have Hunter Green 25-1. I have Michael King 55-1. Zach Wheeler for a minute there was like 6-1, and now he's back down to 320. I'm going to regret not betting that. Those are some guys I'm looking at there. But when it comes to the divisions, the Atlanta Braves are coming back. I think we all made too much about that bad start for them. They're getting healthy. They're plus 360 to win the East. The Mets are falling back. The Phillies are starting to look a little bit old at times, although I love their pitching, hate their bullpen. The Atlanta Braves are going to get Ronald Acuna Jr. back in, over the weekend. They just activated Spencer Strider. At some point, the rest of the guys in the IL will come back and get healthy. And then the summer. Did you know the Atlanta ballpark, Truist Park, has the third highest elevation among ballparks in Major League Baseball? As it heats up in the South, the ball is going to fly more. The offense will come around. And the Atlanta Braves at plus 360, I think, are very live to win the National League East.
All right. Yeah, no, I could see. I mean, they are creeping up. They, they put that bad start behind me. You knew that, especially with Strider back, and they'll get Acuna back at some point, that the talent was there. It's just the Mets and Phillies had a chance to bury him, and they couldn't quite do it. So, long season, as we've seen. Last couple before we get you out of here. Any football takes, any football bets based on the schedule? I guess I'll start with your Giants, who, my goodness, I knew the schedule was tough, but something about seeing the sequence where you go at Commanders, at Cowboys, Chargers, Chiefs, Eagles again, 49ers, all the NFC North teams. I like their draft. I think they might be improved. I don't know if they're improved enough to get 6 wins. This team might be picking top of the draft again.
Roger Goodell does not want Joe Shane and Brian Daboll to keep their jobs. I can tell you that. Because the talking point was, hey, Joe Shane saved his job with a great draft. Thought the draft was good. It wasn't great. Like, I thought it was okay. I'm not a big Jackson Dart guy. I do like the idea of him sitting and developing. I'm okay with that. Like, I can be, if you told me they had to take a quarterback, and obviously they weren't going to get Cam Ward, Jackson Dart would have been probably my next quarterback up. So I understand the thought process, but the schedule's crazy. I see maybe 3 wins on the schedule, if I'm being fair. Like, 3 wins tops. A team that I liked, but now I'm a little bit nervous, is the New England Patriots. I think they improved a lot in the offseason. I think Vrabel is a massive upgrade, but they're very trendy. That has me concerned. Although I do like the idea of Drake May getting some weapons to play with. A couple others that jumped out to me. I thought the Arizona Cardinals had a 10 out of 10 offseason. You look at the draft, they got the corner Will Johnson out of Michigan. They drafted the D tackle Walter Nolan out of Ole Miss. They bring over Josh Sweat from Philly. I think when you look at Jonathan Gannon, he's getting the pieces to do what he did in Philly, now in Arizona. If that defense takes the step that it should next season, and you and I did Live Bet Sunday on VSiN a lot while they were playing, they're a feisty, pesky team. Like, it's there. They're being coached up. They just need the talent. I think Arizona, I think the win total is 8.5. That's a team that I would like to be in on for next season. I think Jacksonville has a chance to blow up next year. I thought 8.5 was a very low total for them. When you look at what Liam Cohen did with Baker Mayfield, let's be fair. Trevor Lawrence talent compared to Baker Mayfield, they're not even in the same stratosphere. They're not in the same universe. Trevor Lawrence has the upside to be a monster in the NFL. He has yet to be properly coached up, and we're going to find out if he can or can't do it this year. I think they are a value play. And then on the over, and then under on the Steelers. What are we doing here? Even if they sign Aaron Rodgers, they're not going over that number. But as it stands right now today, QB1 is Mason Rudolph. Give me that under on the Steelers. And then when it comes to offensive rookie of the year, Will, I bet Tyler Shuck during the draft, right after he got selected, 60-1. I think he stinks. But I thought there was a chance he'd get to start every game. Now, could he be a Davis Mills type where he starts? And he's not expected to do much, and it's to tank to get the first pick so they can get Arch Manning and they can fulfill their own prophecy with the Manning to Manning connection in New Orleans. Maybe that's the chance here. But there is a very small chance that Tyler Shuck, that the NFL sees something that we don't, and he could do something and start 17 games next year. So I love that I have that in pocket. I'd also say Colston Loveland, 28-1 in Chicago, because he's not going to be the focal point of that offense. And if you look at Ben Johnson, when he had Sam Laporta as a rookie out of Iowa and Detroit, they set the rookie receiving yard record, I believe it was, a reception record. So he likes to funnel it into the tight end. And Loveland's a guy who can make plays in space. And then I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth. Will Howard is on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if I'm wrong about Pittsburgh stinking this year, and Will Howard ends up having to start football games, he's 30, 35-1 to win offensive rookie of the year. That is an experienced kid. It's a mobile kid. And if we think about what Arthur Smith thought he could do with Desmond Ridder, Will Howard has all those traits, but is better at everything than Ridder was. Now, what does he have to look like to win offensive rookie of the year? If he's the quarterback and he's a rookie and he gets them into the postseason, is that enough, or does he have to put up monster stats? But that's a guy I'm looking at as well, realizing I may be wrong about the Steelers, where I think they're an underplay, because Will Howard could be a factor that could take them to a different level, where he's an experienced guy. He just won a championship. He knows how to manage the game, and he wanted to be there.
Dustin, you're the best man. We got to do this more. Long overdue. VSiN Live, where else can we find you and all your brilliant takes and thoughts?
At Dustin Sweetelson on X, VSiN Live, Mad Dog Sports Radio, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the weeknights. And occasionally you'll find me on the weekends over at VSiN.
Dustin, appreciate it, man. We'll do it again soon. Thanks.
Yeah, dude, whenever. Thanks, man.
All right, rate, review, subscribe at Apple, Spotify, goldboys.com is where you can check out the Discord. We will be back Friday. See you then.